Hello, everybody, and welcome to General Damage. This episode is episode 71, and if you have noticed, I'm Shade doing the intro.
Yeah, and I'm Nick, not doing the intro, and we're sans Will. He's on another trip.
Out doing Will shit and whatnot.
Out doing Will shit, spending time with his family. So, yeah.
Which is all fine and good. I think we can hold down the podcast. I mean, I haven't burnt it down yet, so that's a start.
Yeah, well, 70 episodes in, I don't think we can burn it down. I mean, well, yeah.
We'd have to try.
We have to try. We could, but yeah, I don't think we're there yet. Yeah. Yeah, so it's just going to be the two of us. What the hell am I? Okay. Fucking chair.
Well, actually, for anyone who knows that today that we're recording is a Thursday, and we release these on Saturdays now.
Yeah.
Today is August 3rd, and in 5 days from now, it's going to be the one-year anniversary for the first ever Overwatch Summer Games event.
Mm.
They sent me an email.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. Before we get into major topics, anyone listening with headphones, good quality headphones, like I recently got, I don't know if they're that good of a quality, but whatever. I apologize for my fans in the background. I have one fan on me and one fan on my laptop. Today was, and where I live in Santa Clara, today was about 85, but it was overcast all day, which meant it got really muggy here. I can't compete with muggy in the South, but muggy in California is not pleasant, so I have to have fans on me. So if you hear the loud droning in the background, I apologize, but I don't want to die.
I mean, don't worry about it. If I do my job right, no one's going to hear the fans.
True. Hopefully. Hopefully they won't. But I'm just, you know, heads up to anyone who's listening with headphones. And yeah. So
I mean, I do a pretty good job, actually. I've learned a few methods. And, you know, what was it? So, well, let's see. As I was originally saying about the Summer Games thing, the only reason I actually just read that off my phone,
mm-hmm.
Blizzard's been super excited about it. People have been talking about it because it's going to be the anniversary of their first ever event. And if you know Blizzard, they do a pretty good job with Overwatch.
Yeah.
They push it pretty far. It's been really interesting, though, because they recently released a new hero. His name is Doomfist. You probably heard of
it.
If you play Overwatch. And, you know, there's been a lot of speculation. And it's actually, it's probably the most underwhelming hero release I've ever seen. And it's not because the hero is bad, but it's because a lot of people got really hyped up that it was going to be voiced, he was going to be voiced by Terry Crews.
Yeah.
Except it didn't happen like that. And, you know, a lot of people are saying it's messed up, they're not saying it's fair, they're like, oh, but Terry Crews said he was going to do it, and Blizzard said that they would love to work with Terry Crews. They never said they wanted to give Terry Crews Doomfist.
Yeah.
And, like, and to be all fair, if you actually see the character's really fucking cool. And it's definitely has a great voice actor because it's a very serious character. I actually would probably hate Doomfist if all he did was, "Empower!"
Yeah, I think it was basically the old, if it was an Old Spice commercial the entire time you were playing.
But, you know, it's interesting because, you know, because of that one fact, everyone's just like, eh, he's okay. Eh, he's alright. Even though he's really fucking cool. He's the second full-built melee champion. He only has one ranged attack.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even, like, a crazy ranged attack, right?
Well, who's he? Who's the other melee attack? Or the other melee character?
Reinhardt.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Reinhardt's Q ability is to do a flame strike, which is pretty cool. But, not Q, E. But what happens is Doomfist has, like, these robot knuckles that shoot out, like, little needles.
Mm.
And that's his primary fire. But he only gets 4 ammo load every, like, 5 seconds, so it's, like, he's really built for, like, his punch attacks. He has an uppercut move. And it's like, oh, that's really interesting. But because of way over, like, you have to remember, Overwatch has grown so much in 1 year.
Right.
They're already on their 5th competitive season. Last year, around this time, they had their first ever big open tournament. And in that time span, they've already pushed themselves to have a different type of feel to the game. And it's funny because the players now are all more complaining about the meta and the new character releases and how that affects everything. And, you know, right now it's called Dive Comp, which is everyone just pushes in with characters that can just barrel through points.
Mm.
And everyone's like, oh, well, he only reinforces the Dive Comp and all this. And it's just funny because it's like, when all the other heroes came out, there was a lot of hype.
Uh-huh.
And it was just different. Everyone's like, oh, all the applications, all the stuff. But once they saw Doofus, everyone was like, kind of meh. And I think it has more to do with the fact, though, that it wasn't Terry Crews.
Which I think is kind of stupid. I mean, well, they kind of shot themselves in the foot because they had there's a whole thing where Terry Crews tweeted that he was in a meeting with Blizzard, and people for some reason immediately, I think someone said, oh, he could be voicing Doomfist. Some journalist outlet said that, and then it just became a wildfire that no one could control. The thing is, I have a feeling all that audio was recorded way before Terry Crews had that meeting.
Most likely. Honestly, though, yeah. I don't want Terry Crews to voice a villain. Because that's the thing, Doomfist is a bad guy.
Oh, he's a bad guy?
Yeah, Doomfist is he's now the new leader of Talon.
Oh, okay.
Which is the bad organization. You're like, oh, well, that's cool. But I don't want Terry Crews to be a bad guy. I want Terry Crews voicing good guys. You know, he's built that image of himself.
Yeah, and I think the reason why Terry Crews was at meeting with Blizzard was he did this whole thing where he saw his son, or one of his kids, his son, watching streamers or like Let's Players on YouTube, and he didn't get it, but he wanted to be, you know, be involved with his son like that. So he did this whole thing. I think I talked about it before. He did this whole thing where he bought all this stuff to build a PC. He live streamed it, I think, on Facebook or something, and people helped him build a PC live. And he got into
I remember that.
He got into gaming that way. And I think Blizzard kind of tapped him, saying, "Hey, you want to like come by? We can talk. Maybe we could be partners, do some sort of event." I don't think it had anything to do with Terry Crews being on any project yet. He could down the road, but not yet.
I mean, ultimately, if he joins, you know, the voice acting team, that's only a huge bonus for Blizzard.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's also like it has to be proper application of Terry Crews, right?
Yeah, I mean, I can see him playing something like a wild cousin of the Torbjorn or some shit like that.
Yeah, and that would be really cool. Like, there's more. I think there's a lot of room for it. And, you know, ultimately, I'm sure the hype will come back with this character, because he's really cool, he's really fun, and he hasn't actually entered the competitive yet. He's not a playable character in competitive mode. So,
you know,
but it's weird. It's just weird because it's like, he's so fucking cool, and they also released a really cool animation with
him. Yeah, I saw that. That was pretty dope. Even though I don't care for anime like that, it was pretty good.
Right.
The one thing I have to say this, let's say we go back to the Terry Crews thing. If Terry Crews does wind up doing a voice for a character in Overwatch, one, he'll be the biggest celebrity, quote unquote, that Overwatch has, which might be a little unfair to the voice actors that they already have, but let's, you know, cross that bridge when they come to it. But the other thing is, if they were making a character, I don't want them to make a character around Terry Crews. I just want them to make a character that Terry Crews can fit into. And I don't want him to be an offensive player. It'd be great if he was a healer or something.
I like that too, to be honest, because
it's,
the thing is,
it's
like,
too stereotypical. Oh, you're a guy with a gun that runs around screaming? Oh, yeah, we've seen that in every movie you've been in. More or less.
Well, it's also interesting that you mentioned that, because Doomfist is an offensive character,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, he is.
And, like, the other thing, by the way, Doomfist is really well-designed. You know, his look is really what fits the character that they wanted to create. All of his skins are really representative of, like, actual African culture and their beliefs, and that's really cool. But, like, yeah, I just, like, seeing the character now, I'm like, no, this isn't Terry Crews. Yeah. This was never going to be Terry Crews. Ultimately, too, like you said, if Terry Crews joined the voice acting team, he's the first real non-pure voice talent, right? Because, like, he's an actor. And so I've always pressed the question, too, which is, like, well, what happens when they start pushing for more voice actors who are more commonly known in TV shows, right? Because that's the other direction they could go in, because most of the people on their lineup are people who are solely known for games,
right? And that's the thing, they could feel some backlash with that too, because like that's the problem. Like the documentary, I know that voice had that whole thing where it's like, yeah, you spend millions of dollars to get this actor to do a voice in this animated film, and it could fall flat, which happened with Brad Pitt in one animated film. Like, it just didn't work. So they have to realize that. I the thing is, like, I think Terry Crews voicing a character in Overwatch is fine because he's trying to get the lore, not the lore, he's trying to get the world of games and gamers and nerds. It would be stupid if they got some other actor just because, you know, there's some other actor. Like, no, don't do that. Don't go for the cash grab. You're going for Terry Crews because the dude's into it. He's a fan. He's a legitimate fan. You shouldn't just go out and get other celebrities just because. It's a stupid way to go.
Well, here's how you're insulting your whole cast. Well, here's how I measure it, right? Terry Crews is an actor.
Right.
Not much of a voice actor, right? I think people liked the meme idea of Terry Crews being a voice actor for the character.
Yeah.
Right? But I bet you if he actually voiced Doomfist, people would hate it, right?
Oh, yeah.
On the flip side, there is one person on their team, Crispin Freeman, who voices Winston.
Uh-huh.
Crispin Freeman mostly does anime, actually. Mm-hmm. That's a huge part of what he does. But for instance, you got a big celebrity who is also a talented voice actor. Say you got Mark Hamill, right?
Yeah.
I bet you people would lose their fucking minds.
Yeah.
No matter what the turnout was. The character could be shit, right? But because it's Mark Hamill, you know, oh, but he can't do any wrong. And it's like, I want to like the game and I want to like the team making all the shit and all the people they pick because it's trying to build the world out, like you said. Like, they make a character, they try to make it fit.
Right.
Not make a character around a real person, because ultimately that's just going to suck.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. You have to make a character fit and then get the proper talent that can make that character come to life. Which is why I think they should always go to a voice actor first, before just making a grab at a celebrity, which is my whole problem with a lot of the Xbox, the late 360 games and PS3 games that had a bunch of stupid celebrities in it. Like Kevin Spacey was in Call of Duty. There's a ton of celebrities in one of the Battlefield games where it was about cops.
Yeah.
So it's just like, don't go that route. Don't digitize some celebrity and put them in a game, especially this game, and make it uncanny valley as fuck. It ruins the experience. I don't need to see an actor. I don't want to see that actor. You know?
You know what game was actually really great, and it had a bunch of celebrity cameos? Who? It was that Jack Black game, the Rock and Roll
Battle. Yeah, it was Brutal Legend.
Brutal Legend. That game was hilarious. Like, my friend played it. I watched him play it. It had all these rock legends and shit. And it was just fun.
Yeah, because it worked in that sense because it was also stylized and it was about how rock is this lore and mythos. You know, so it didn't play it up. This was actual actors in a game and as realistic as they could get. You know,
yeah, that's just
it's a stupid. Like, okay, if you want to make a movie, make a fucking movie. Don't interfere this, you know, horse shit. Because when you go so real, you get in an uncanny valley, and it just doesn't work. I hate that. I fucking hate it. I don't like it when celebrities get involved with games and nerd culture because you know when they're phoning it in. That's the thing. That's the thing. Terry Crews is not phoning it in. So. But yeah, it'd be cool if he voiced a character down the road. Or not even a character. If there's a map that came out for Overwatch where it had this ambient announcer, like it was an arena, and you just had Terry Crews screaming like the announcer, that'd be fun.
Oh, you kidding me? Everyone keeps asking Blizzard to do that because Heroes of the Storm, their MOBA, that has announcer packs. Like, you could swap out the announcer with other characters.
Right.
And everyone's like, oh, why don't you have that for Overwatch?
Yeah.
That'd be hilarious to hear. But yeah, if Terry Crews just did a fucking announcer pack, done.
Yeah, it could do something like that. But like Will told me, I never played Borderlands 2, and I should. It's like sitting on the Xbox One in the hard drive.
Yeah.
I think it was Rob or Will telling me that there is a villain, when you entered his area, he would never stop talking, And he...
Oh, yeah, Mr., the guy from the slaughter.
Yeah, he looked like a wrestler, like a Macho Man Randy Savage or something like that. And he also had, like, this voice thing on his... He also had this box on his throat that affected his voice box that, like, stopped them from swearing. But he never stopped talking through the entire ordeal that you were going through. And it went to a point, like, that's neat, too. That's annoying. This is fucking hilarious. And I think if they had a map that was just for Terry Crews' announcer character, where he's just going off about everything, that could be fun. Maybe. I don't know. But it's just a thought.
Are you kidding me? I would love to hear Terry Crews yell, "Oh my god, it's a team kill! Did you see that? His head left his body!" Yeah.
It's like, that's crazy! That dude just killed 5 people! What the hell? You know, I think he would have kept the language down. Because I just wanted to say fuck right there. Because what, with Overwatch is what, teen?
Yeah.
Teen for teen, because none of the characters swear really big. But considering that I've heard that the environment's getting kind of toxic, it doesn't stop people from dropping, you know, saying fuck and calling people, you know, racial slurs and homophobic epithets.
Just like everything else, video games too has its shitlords.
Yep. Half of that is just people wanting to bitch about something.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think they really hate it. Like, people bitching about Doctor Who and the whole being female thing. I think that's just people looking to fight. They don't Same, give a shit. Absolutely. They don't really give a shit. They're just looking to fight.
Can I quickly filter to another topic? Because it's exactly what I was going to talk about. Dream Daddy.
Yeah.
Dream Daddy, the game that Game Grumps helped make, you know, the dad dating simulator. Funny idea. Hilarious idea. Awesome idea, right? So an artist by the name of Onips decided to draw the whole cast of Dream Daddy as moms, right?
Okay.
There's no way that could be harmful, right? There's just, like, did it, the drawings, all the characters look like female versions of themselves. They weren't all the same, you know, thin waist, big chest, you know, shittily drawn characters. Like, an artist who put a lot of thought into the design.
Right.
Well, so, canonically, the it's not in the game, but the devs were like, yeah, this one dad is trans. And that's fine, right?
Right.
Totally cool. But the problem is, people got really pissed off with Onips because they were like, well, you just took a trans person and erased them by creating all these people to be women.
Mm.
And it's just like, it was just reaching, right? It was crazy because the game's only been out for like a week. And it was just like people started threatening and Onips jumped off all social media to get away from all the threats and messages and hate. And it's just like, why? Like, the person didn't make fun of the trans character. The person didn't even probably think that that character was trans because she just saw the game and was like, oh, I want to turn them into moms because I think it's fun.
Right. I mean, they people always do that. They always do the gender swap thing with characters.
Yeah. So it should have been no different. And yet somehow just harassment. Like, I went on the Twitter to see what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
That was a shit show. And the thing is, like, I was talking about it with some friends earlier and I was like, I don't think the LGBT community really cared. I think it was a lot of people who wanted to fight on the behalf of the LGBT community.
Yeah, that's the...
And that's I see that a lot. I just don't get it.
Like, you know, it's a problem with allies. Like, it's fine that you support... Like, I support friends that are LGBTQ, where they fall on that spectrum. It's fine. I support them. I'm an ally. But take it from someone who literally went looking for fights when he was younger. It's not the thing you should do. Just to prove a point, like, no, you don't do that. Don't go. That's the problem with allies, is they go looking to fight, thinking that they're gonna help, and they're just, it's, you're just throwing more gas on the fire, and you shouldn't. That's all it is.
Yeah, and ultimately, too, it's like, the artist, like, no matter how you look at it, because at first I was like, well, maybe there's something I didn't know, maybe the artist said something.
Uh-huh.
Not really the case, though. The artist just did a thing.
Right.
And no one even asked the artist about why they did it, right? She actually released a quick sketchup, like a speed paint of her making the characters.
What was the name of the artist again?
Onips. Onips. Like,
huh.
I don't know. Ultimately, it was dumb.
Right.
And it's just it's concerning, but at the same time, I'm like, well, at this, if you look at it, the majority of people who are a huge part of this fandom are Game Grumps fans.
Right.
And, like, Game Grumps is cool and all that, but they can have some pretty crazy-ass fans.
Well, fuck, it's been 4 years now since JonTron left, and people are still thinking there's a conspiracy behind that.
Yep. And, I mean, nothing against, like, Ego Raptor or Ninja Sex Party, right? Because they're generally pretty cool people, but they're also they're like fringe entertainment, almost. Like, Ego Raptor got his start on Newgrounds, and that was, like, used to be the fringe website for animators and stuff. Ninja Sex Party is, like, an alternative, like, nerdcore, almost, at this point. And I think that's fine, but then you definitely get people who, when you pull from semi-repressed fringe groups, you always get people who start to get too comfortable, and they start to speak out. And they're not always the nicest.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what ultimately this came down to, is just like a lot of... I don't necessarily think anyone who legitimately represents the LGBT community to who were upset, because I didn't see any of that, right?
Yeah.
Like, I saw no one who basically said, hey, this is offensive for these reasons, or please understand from this perspective. A lot of it was just, fuck you, go die, why'd you do this, how could you erase this person? It's like, you know, there's usually a lot more forethought when someone's really trying to defend something versus someone who's just going off like a cannon.
And the other thing is, like, LGBTQ, their fight is with the government and governments of the state and finding rights as just to be actual individuals and recognize that they're, you know, people that are gay and trans, you know, and all bisexual and all this other stuff. And making it so they don't have to go through life being harassed and, you know, even threatened and murdered. That's more concerning to them than a person who did fan art for a fucking dating sim game. A dating sim game that I think will only be so popular watching Twitch streamers play it. You know? It's Game Grumps helped make a game. They made an ironic game that kind of goes with their sense of humor because they constantly talk about fucking each other. Okay, fine. Sure, go ahead. Go make that shit. I probably will never play it. But, it's whatever. This is allies thinking they're doing good and stirring up shit that they shouldn't be stirring up.
Yeah, actually, I liked another way, something really quick, because Ashley said something about that. For anyone who hasn't seen it, there's an animation called In a Heartbeat.
Oh, yeah.
Looks like it's made by Pixar.
I saw it. It's really good.
Yeah, really good. Recommend it. But Ashley pointed out something where it was a Tumblr post about, it's like, show two hands shaking, right? And it says, In a Heartbeat is a wonderful example of, animation that represents, actual gay people and what it's like to be a kid growing up being gay, right, and coming out.
No.
And then, like, no, there's a handshake. Yeah. It's like, it's a good film.
Right.
It's good. And then another one is, it says, the caption is, we thank the Yaoi gods for this piece of art, and it's a person washing their hands.
Oh.
And when someone's like, there's a big difference between liking something because it gives representation,
mm-hmm.
and then claiming something because you want to fetishize it or, you know, have this control, like this place in it that you don't.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, straight people have a tendency to kind of jump in on things and think they control it or they're a part of it. But really, it's not the same as, like, respecting the representation that something gives.
Yeah.
Like, and I can apply that to Dream Daddy because I was thinking about, like, that's pretty much how it feels. It's like, it's a lot of people claiming to have a hand in something when I don't think they do.
Yeah, but I think the majority of those people, if the majority of people that were bitching online about this person's fan art and threatening this person, which they shouldn't be, then I think that game be selling a lot more copies.
Well, really quick, I'm going to do a quick Dream Daddy Steam. Let's see how it's doing on Steam, because I thought it was doing pretty good last time I checked.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't checked either.
Very positive, 1,576 reviews.
That's decent.
Not bad.
It's not bad. I mean, like, you compare that to other games. That's nothing of the indication to how many people bought a copy?
Well, all it does say is out of 1,700 reviews, right?
Right.
178 of them are negative. So, not necessarily a perfect measuring stick, but that's not a bad indication.
Yeah, but right? I don't really, like, have any faith in Steam reviews, because I've read negative reviews before with Steam, and this dude said, this game is terrible, it's a waste of time. The motherfucker had over 100 hours in it. I forget what game it was, but it's like, if it's so bad, why'd you, like, play, like, how long is 100 hours? Like, 5 days? You know?
Yeah, the skew is often
bad. Yeah, so, I mean, it's bizarre, but who knows how. Steam never releases their numbers, which aggravates the hell out of me.
True.
Well, whatever. I mean, I think Game Grumps can release its numbers of how well it's selling. I don't know if it's being sold on any other platform.
Yeah, I don't know of either, to be honest. But, all in all, like, I think it's cool that they helped produce a game.
Yeah.
That was different. And it came out pretty well from what I heard. But, you know, well, then again, it's only been out since July 20th, right?
I believe, yeah.
So, yeah, I'm looking at the thing now. So if we look at that, that's roughly about 2 weeks from today. That's not too bad. You can definitely see if it picks up or whatnot. I don't think that necessarily that backlash had any negative press, but it definitely, because it almost flew under my radar. A friend was talking about it. But it definitely is concerning when you start picking up on these trends.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, it can be a vile place. Twitter can be a vile. The thing that really ticks me off is, like, Gamergate happened, like, what?
3 years ago,
maybe
now?
Even longer than that. And Twitter still has not done anything really to help thwart the harassment that is happening on its own fucking site. Yeah. And it's just, it's like, you fucking do something already, you know? And they haven't. And yeah. But they've gone through like 4 CEOs, I think. I could be totally wrong. But I've known they've gone through at least 2 or 4 CEOs within the past 2 years or something. Again, I'm pulling that out of my ass. I'm not 100% sure, but I know they have gone through upper management shuffling a lot. So, I hardly use Twitter, so whatever.
I've tried to use it more.
Yeah. Every time I think I have a good tweet, I'm in the shower and I can't really tweet. That's what I want to tweet, is my shower thoughts. Because why not?
Oh yeah.
Move on to something I don't want to talk about. I don't know a whole lot about it, but so this is like one of the Artur games that's supposedly coming out of Japan, and none of them have done all that fantastic from my understanding. Like Mighty No. 9 was an Artur game. So
yeah,
this is falling in the same line of that a little bit, but different. So I forget the name of the studio, but the guy who's responsible for like leading the team to make Final Fantasy Tactics was making a pseudo sequel to that, called Unsung Heroes, and they raised like $660,000 on Kickstarter, and then recently they kind of just said, yeah, we were trying to make this game and we did everything we could and well, we're not making it anymore. And then there's more statements. I didn't write it all down, but they basically said we're not making it.
Is that legal?
I don't know. I mean, that's the risk of Kickstarters. But like, supposedly all the money that was put into the project, all 666,000 of it, plus some other investments, has been used. And the game's not being finished by this team and this studio. Another studio called Little Orbit that's responsible for making Barbie games, mostly, like Barbie Dream Horse Adventure and shit like that, they're taking over the project. But here's the other kicker. They're taking over the project and they're starting from scratch. I don't think they're getting anything from what the other studio did.
Interesting.
Yeah. I'd be mad if I invested in that game.
Well, so, I mean, it's weird because this is the first time that's ever happened, because Kickstarter's policy is you don't get the money until you meet the pledge, right?
Yeah.
And then you have to use the funds to only see through the pledge. Like the guy who made potato salad?
Uh-huh.
They were like, you can only use this money to make potato salad.
Right.
You have to buy only potato salad ingredients, and you have to send us every single receipt or something. And it's like, okay, sure. That guy got away with it, right? Probably made a shit ton of potato salad. Fuck him. But that's weird because they started making it, right?
Uh-huh.
And stopped. And I don't think there's ever been a precedence for someone not being able to complete it.
Yeah, well, like, but apparently, like, they went through the whole Kickstarter thing, they got the money, they started making the game, and now they say they're not finishing it.
But, so that's weird. Like, I know ultimately that's what happens with investments, right? Because that's what Kickstarter is.
Yeah, you're investing. It's kind of like gambling, I guess.
But the thing is, like, it doesn't make sense. Ultimately, like, I do feel like those people are not going to get their money back.
No, they won't.
And there's no necessary obligation that they can't get their money back, but there definitely needs to be some sort of legal precautions between Kickstarter and the company who made it, possibly, if the game goes nowhere, because, like, there's an agreement, of course, like, between you, the project, and Kickstarter, which is like, hey, we're not going to screw with the crowdfunding, we're not going to do anything illegal on the website, we're going to use our funding to complete our project.
Yeah.
And so it's like, well, it's just weird because I'm trying to wrap my head around what could happen, I guess, the ramifications of letting this go for Kickstarter, because, like, people aren't going to take this lying down.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't either, because, like, there's other things that they kind of said that were shady, was like, you know, development time kind of got ahead of away from us, and we were actually focusing on this whole PvP thing and this PvE aspect of the game. And the original pitch that they did on Kickstarter had nothing, that said nothing about multiplayer. So now all of a sudden they're talking about multiplayer and saying that how that's delaying the game, and they probably need more funding for that, or that's eating up development time. So it just seems shady. By the way, the studio's name was Playdeck. But yeah, it's...
Playdeck?
Yeah, I'd be mad. These are the kinds of things that make me not want to invest in anything like Kickstarter or Indiegogo. And I see a lot of cool shit, but it's like, I don't know if you can do that. Or if you will stick to it.
I mean, it's definitely concerning. Like, I've backed Kickstarter a few times, right?
Yeah, I backed one.
But I backed Shovel Knight.
Oh, that was a Kickstarter?
Yeah, and that was really cool. I backed Shovel Knight. I was really proud to back Shovel Knight because I believed in the idea, right? I also backed Mighty Number 9. Also completed. Believed in the idea. Turned out to be horseshit. Right. And, you know, that happens, right?
Yeah.
And then sometimes it's like, oh, you can pledge money, and if it... Like, most of the time it's like, oh, well, this Kickstarter fell through. It didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
But in the case where... I don't know... how, I guess, is the best way to put it, where, like, because on Kickstarter, you're like, we calculate the funds, right? We need this much money to make this game.
Right.
So either they lied about their fund needs, or they made a bunch of mistakes and couldn't pay for it. That's how I'm looking at it. I mean, if they just took the money and run, like, if they put, like, minimal amount of work in it, that's fucked up. And that needs to, and I guess the best way to put it is, it needs to be investigated.
Yeah, I think it should be investigated because I feel like there's a fraud there. At the same time, the studio that's supposedly going to be finishing this game that was supposed to be out in 2015, by the way, according to Kickstarter, the little orbit that's getting to, quote, make the game now, finish the game, they're starting from scratch, and it's like, who the hell is, like, really making the game? And, like, is the first copies really still going to the people that invested in the Kickstarter? Like, is Little Orbit have to abide by that? Like, it's very weird and very, very shady. And it's also, it's like, you know... Like, it's very disconcerting with crowdfunding. And I remember when crowdfunding was like huge, and everyone was like, "Oh yeah, we should do crowdfunding." And it's like, man, that might not be as safe as you think.
I think crowdfunding's good for people who want to, for basically like indie startups who are literally just starting out, who want to try and prove themselves,
right? Yeah.
Or entrepreneurs who are inventors, who are actually people who own their patents and just need the funding to prove that they can do it. I think it's great for
them. I think having, like, say, a finished project or close to a finished project, and the money is basically going to be to distribute said project, that's probably the better way to go.
Yeah, so here's the big thing, like, Dungeon Roll. You played that game.
Yes, right? The game that you and I have been redesigning.
Yeah. Dungeon Roll was a Kickstarter.
Right.
And actually, Dungeon Roll turned itself into a board game, I found out.
Interesting.
And, you know, great concept and all, but the guy running it, the guy who was, like, really in charge of really developing the game, not very good at explaining how he wanted to go about it. Not very, you know what I mean? Like, he wasn't really good about staying up to date and understanding, like, what people wanted to see or hear.
Right.
Like, half his update videos were shot on his phone.
Yeah, that's... No.
But... Like, I think it was good for him because it was like, well, I have this board game, I have the rules, I have all the stuff, I just need to make the materials, and I can explain how expensive it's going to be, right? And everyone was like, okay, cool. And then he released a few versions of the game, and then ultimately it just evolved into a board game, and I'm like, well, you know, neat.
Yeah.
But when it comes down to, like, what's currently going on, there's all sorts of crazy-ass games and stuff coming out, all sorts of heavy-duty projects where I'm like, you guys really should have gone to a publisher. Mm-hmm. Or someone else. And the reason I say that is because those projects don't get funded, not because they're bad, but because they charge ridiculous amounts of pledge money for the backer to receive something. Now, newsflash for people who use Kickstarter, you are not owed anything when you pledge money. The whole point is to make the thing become a reality. Them giving you stuff for the pledge stuff is just them on goodwill.
Yeah.
They're not really... And, like, there was this one really cool board game in Sweden where I was like, oh, this looks cool. But I looked at it, I was like, well... The minimum pledge amount is $10, and that's to get a, and, you know, you get a mention and stuff, right? And, like, that's cool, but, like, for the people who want to get early access to the board game and stuff, you had to pledge, like, $75.
Yeah.
And some people commented, like, oh, that's a ripoff and all that, and I'm like, no, guys, you can't be angry that the game costs $75 to distribute, because, newsflash, that game's probably going to cost $75 in the store. The problem is, though, like, they need any amount of money you can get.
Yeah.
That's what it comes down to. Like... And then, of course, for people who, like, fund movies, I think funding movies is probably the best use of Kickstarter.
Oh, really? You think that?
I think that because games and stuff are cool, but publishers are much easier to, in my opinion, to get, like, help from. And it has less backlash from, like, the wants of the people. Most of the time, when you back a movie or a video or some sort of, like, visual concept on Kickstarter... The rewards are a lot more manageable, they're a lot more realistic, and the price rate, like, not price ranges, but the pledge amounts are a lot more understandable. Because, you know, people are like, oh, if I pledge $20, I get a, you know, digital download of this movie that it's going to happen, and I get my name in the credits. That makes sense, right? Like, getting credited and then, like, oh, I helped back, that's pretty cool. Like, or in the worst case scenario when it's like, oh, you pledge $100, you get to name a background character.
Right?
That will actually say their name in the movie. It's like, well, that's neat because that's the person's influence on the project and feeling like they're a part of it, but it doesn't ultimately affect the project, and it ultimately does not feel like they're trying to purchase the project. You know what I mean? And I think movies do a better job of that. That being said, though, there are some really shitty, terrible movie ideas that people try to kickstart, and it just doesn't work. Because they're just not good movie ideas. And that's why people think games are probably more popular than movies, is because games have a higher success rate, but that's because people think it's just them buying the game early.
Yeah, I guess. I'd be wary about backing anything, because you just don't know really what the end product...
Oh, no, you should...
Yeah.
You should always be wary, like...
Which is why I've only backed one project, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I don't back every project I see. I only back projects I believe in. Like, I saw... the trailer for Shovel Knight, and I was like, I believe in this awesome platforming game. And so I was like, yeah, I'll pay you $10. Make the game. Hope it's
great. Yeah, if I wanted to go on Kickstarter, Kickstarter would be a list of options of how I would get funding for something that I wanted to do and was like 50 to 70% done with. I like a game. You know, I want this game to be better than what it looks like, so yeah, I'm going to go on and do a crowdfunding campaign and try and get the game finished so I can maybe distribute it, and then hopefully I'll get the money. But the other problem with Kickstarters is some, like, you know, the dice rings from Crit Success?
Yeah.
So I think they were asking for, I'm going to fuck it up, but like, I don't know, anywhere between $5,000 and $10,000. I'm ballparking. I could be wrong. They got, okay, I think, in the six figures towards the end of their month-long pledge.
Okay.
And to me, that's a bit overwhelming because it's like, well, what the fuck do you do? What the hell do you do with that kind of money? Like, what else can you make with it? It's just like all of a sudden you have too much money. That's the other problem.
I like, there was this one board game. Mm-hmm. It was like a dwarf board game or something like that. And I like what they said about that exact issue. They said if we get, you know, they had basically three pledge tiers, right? And they had like two bonus tiers if they got more. And then everyone's like, oh, what about the other bonus tiers? They go, there's no other bonus tiers, but we can tell you that any other money we get will use to only be order more copies of the game.
That's smart.
Yeah, they were like for instance, say every $1,000 we could get like 100 copies of the game made, right?
Right.
So they're like, if we make an extra 10,000, that's an extra, you know, 1,000 copies of the game.
Hmm.
And I like that because I was like, and they explained, they're like, we're gonna bring this game to Gen Con. We're gonna bring this game to all these conventions. We're going to try and get it sold in this store, like, in our local town. And we're going to try and get it sold to the neighboring town. Like, they were like, this is the point of our project.
Right, right.
And that was really realistic. And I like that because some games just have endless, like, stretch goals.
Yeah.
And the problem is, it's like, you don't... The developers or whoever creates the project feels obligated to have, like, a shit ton of stretch goals. No, you're not. You are obligated to finish a fucking product, and stretch goals are nice to reward people for their extra effort.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's smart. You know, have a stretch goal, have, like, two or three stretch goals for X amount of funds that you think you need, and everything after that is just, we'll give more. You know? That's smart. Then you can, you know, build a library. But, yeah, it's... Right now, I would not go to a crowdfunding campaign. Because, like, I want to go to a crowdfunding campaign to invest in something because I just don't know what I'm going to get, and I probably won't get it for a year or two. And I don't know if I'll go to Kickstarter or Indiegogo or any of those campaigns to fund something that I wanted to do because I don't know if I'll meet the deadline and meet the wishes that I've set forth for people to back it, you know? I don't want to do that. There's too much risk, in my opinion.
Oh, totally.
Too much public risk. I'll rephrase that. Because then you wind up with this shit where people think you stole, like, you know, like a little over $500,000. So. It's some sketchy shit.
No, totally.
What was that? Other things I wanted to talk about. Well, is there something you wanted to talk about?
Well, really quick, because Will and I talked about RTX.
Right.
Will talked about his trip at RTX. I talked about what I saw. And one of the things in the Ruby panel that I forgot to mention was the guys who worked on the animation team were like, hey, Evo is next week, right?
Right.
Evo's the, you know, fighting game tournament of the year. Huge, huge competitive thing. And they're like, hey, if you watch that, you might see something interesting.
Right.
And everyone's like, well, what the hell's going on? Well, so there's a game. Anyone who plays a lot of fighting games knows about Blaze Blue, which is one of the big, more anime-esque fighting games. Often gets confused with Guilty Gear by people like me who don't play a lot of fighting games. But they announced a game this year, which was BlazBlue Cross Tag Battle, right?
Right.
And so it's a game that's bridging not just BlazBlue, but it's actually crossing over with some other fighting games. And two of them are the Persona 4 Arena, which is a game that came out about 2 years ago, mm-hmm. and people really like that. And then the other one is Under Night in Birth, which is a more arcade fighter about vampires. And I was like, okay, that's interesting. But at the end of the trailer, a Rooster Teeth character fucking popped up in the game.
Nice.
And it was Ruby Rose, who's the main character of Ruby, and everyone lost their shit.
Right.
And, like, I'm not, like, huge into fighting games, but I was like, this is big for Rooster Teeth. Their characters from the anime that they make just got into a fucking fighting game. And a big one at that.
Right.
And so it's not just a fighting game where it's like, oh, here's BlazBlue, whatever, with a bunch of Rooster Teeth characters. It's like, oh no, they're branching out to two other games as well, right?
Right.
Trying to create like this one super fighter, and I was just like, man, Rooster Teeth must be feeling good about themselves.
Yeah.
Because you don't get deals like that just by like being popular. Like, you have to really work to prove that.
Well,
because Arc and Atlas are the two big names behind the game. Uh-huh. Arc makes BlazBlue, Atlas owns Persona, and I think French Bread or someone else owns In Birth Under Night.
Mm-hmm.
So, Under Night, In Birth, I can't remember that game's name. All I know is it's like, this is cool because now it's a collaborative work, and it looks like it's going to be big.
Right.
So, and I thought that was really sneaky of Rooster Teeth to be like, hey, go check out Evo.
Because
there was no context for this at all.
Right. Yeah, that's pretty cool. At the same time, I think Rooster Teeth is feeling pretty big for themselves because they had an actual feature-length movie with Laser Team, and they're making a sequel to it. And I don't think the sequel had a crowdfunding campaign like the first one.
I don't think so either. Also, they've been doing Day 5, and there's on season 2 of Day 5.
Yeah, now. Which is apparently a huge, big, a big series, drama series of theirs, which is cool. So,
well, Rooster Teeth did technically do a joint venture with a production company. Mm-hmm. I remember, I can't remember who the production company is, but basically everyone's like, oh, Rooster Teeth got bought out. And it was like, no, Rooster Teeth did a joint production deal with a big production company so they could produce more content.
Right.
And they wanted to produce bigger content. Basically the stuff that makes Laser Team in Day 5.
Right.
The only real in-house stuff right now that's really controlled that isn't gameplay stuff is Ruby, Camp Camp,
RDB.
You know, the 12 Little Roosters skit, which they keep revamping. Like, they did like some, they did a spy version after a murder mystery, and that was pretty cool.
Oh, okay, I didn't see that one. Yeah, but
so like they have like all this resources, and it's just cool to see that they, as a independent production company or a content creation company, are making way into games.
Yeah.
And I think that's neat.
But I mean, like, me and Will have talked about that before, which is like, the founding fathers of Rooster Teeth, their backgrounds have been film and acting. So it makes sense that they're doing like a lot of series and movies and things like that.
Oh no, totally.
So, I mean, I don't know if you ever watched Bernie's vlogs, but you can see the amount of work he puts into that shit. And it's because he's a film guy, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really watch a lot of his independent stuff. Right. But I've always said that if I had to meet one person for Rooster Teeth, it'd either be Gus or Bernie.
Yeah, I would like to meet Bernie.
I mean, the only reason I say that is because when the company was starting out, mm-hmm. it was a lot of those two taking semi-big risks.
Yeah.
Not knowing what was going to happen. And then, if I'm correct, Jeff is one of the founding fathers.
And
he was kind of more like agreeing with decisions, but he wasn't necessarily like making waves.
It was the founding fathers are Jeff, Bernie, Gus, Matt Hollum, and Joel. I forget his last name. Then Joel. Those are the five guys who are the founding fathers of it. And Jeff and Gus did Drunk Gamers reviews for a while, and Bernie helped them build a website for it. that's how they all kind of mingled, and then Bernie was friends with Matt Hullum, and they all kind of just got together and they started growing from there. So
yeah. And I applaud the back then being the risk takers they were to try and, you know, push what they could do.
Yeah. I mean, you know, yeah, you have to give that up for them. I mean, technically, you could say Rooster Teeth inspired me to do this, but I'm not trying to be Rooster. We're not. I don't want General Damage to be Rooster Teeth.
Trust me. I don't think we'll be
there. Well, we're not film people. We like talking about film, but we don't have that background. We have another different background. So we need to look at other options of what we can do beyond the podcast. It's totally up in the air. I mean, we're only like a year and a half into this shit. So it's like, I don't want to be Rooster Teeth. I'm inspired by them. I like what they do, but I'm looking at doing something else. That's me.
Yeah.
So yeah, it is cool that they're 15 years. They're popular. They had their, you know, internet.
It's insanely.
Yeah. Cool. Internet famous. They have Monty, the late Monty Ohm. His character is living in another game. Fighting is, which is awesome.
Yeah, like, and ultimately too, when you think about just how far Rooster Teeth's come, I remember seeing the first episode of Red vs. Blue,
right?
And like, oh, this is funny, right? But it's like, oh, this is like an internet show. And I'll look at it. It's fucking, it's almost a pop culture phenomenon at this point.
Yeah, for sure. It's the longest running web series. So yeah. Something I want to talk about. I want to talk about two movies to get on a different subject.
Sure. Since
we talked about films and stuff. So, we're going to save it for next week, but The Dark Tower comes out. Again, as Shane said in the beginning of the podcast, we're recording on Thursday. It's August 3rd, and this comes out Saturday. So, by Saturday, the movie The Dark Tower will already be out. For us, it comes out tomorrow. But apparently, that movie's not doing so well. And the reason why is, so The Dark Tower's whole thing is that I could see a series of 8 books. And the movie has been in production hell for a very long time. And the movie that we're getting tomorrow isn't so hot. Like, it's kind of like a lot of people are like going, ah, shit, with this movie. Which sucks. And apparently the reason is they are combining, I think, a couple of the first books into one movie.
Ah, that explains it.
Yeah, and so, yeah, well, we can talk more about it when more reviews come out, and we'll definitely talk about it next week, we will. But yeah, it's not doing too well.
No, I mean, that's a interesting thing, and I hope the movie does well. Like, I hope when it releases, people love it.
But, no, I mean, that's the...
You know, with books, the problem is when you do that, when you mush books together.
That's the thing. Like, I mean, a lot of the reviews are basically saying fans that have read these books since they have been coming out will be disappointed. Like, they don't think Matthew McConaughey doesn't do a good job as a villain. Idris Elba is good, but it just doesn't fit. There's just not, like, the visual effects are okay-ish, you know? There's, like, it's very muddled. They don't stay. They don't world build, apparently. Which is very bad for a fantasy.
Yeah.
But yeah, we can definitely talk about more about that with Will, because Will has read, I think, at least 3 of the books so far.
Okay.
When we were on vacation, I think he was reading the second book or the third book. I can't remember. I think it was the second book. But,
Well, so what's the other movie you want to talk about?
The other movie I want to talk about is Death Wish.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a remake of the 1974 Charles Bronson movie Death Wish, where it's basically about Vigilante who goes after the gang members or whatever that, I think, killed his family or wronged his family. And, you know, if you watch it, it's a very much 70s... They killed his wife. It's a very much in the original Charles Bronson movie, which I think they made 4 of.
Let's take a look. I'm actually looking at his filmography right now.
How do I put this? It's very much in the 70s. It's very much a stereotype. There's a lot of blaxploitation in it.
By the way, five.
Five Death Wish movies?
They made five Death Wish
movies. Jesus fucking Christ.
Which is kind of like, which kind of feels like the same thing with Taken, which is like, why'd you make more
than
two?
Yeah, you know, yeah, it's like, you're a bad father. Like,
I mean, I actually see the first Death Wish.
Yeah.
It was on TV once on Spike, which shouldn't surprise anyone. I mean, it wasn't like the most amazing film, but I was like, ah, that's
cool. It's got like a cult following, and but it's very much set in its times, you know?
Yeah, I can't actually imagine it had fucking five other remakes.
Five other sequels, yeah, right? I mean, well, Police Academy had seven. Who asked for the other six? I don't know.
Ugh.
But we're getting a remake of Death Wish. And Bruce Willis is starring in it. He's the Charles Bronson in this one, essentially. The character, anyway. And it's just, it's like, this is not the time for this kind of movie. Like, Eli Roth is directing it. And he's just like a jerk-off with movies about in the 70s and the grungy
Eli
shit.
Eli Roth, why does...
Eli Roth, Hostel.
Oh, it's that
guy. Yeah, that guy.
Oh my god, no, I'm actually looking at this thing right now. Oh, no.
Yeah, it's just, it's like... But, like, just considering the climate of the of gun control laws, the politics we have today, the shootings that we hear about, it seems weekly, the mass shootings that we hear about, this is just the wrong kind of movie to make.
Yeah, he's been making a lot of movies that I don't think have been good.
Who, Eli Roth or Bruce Willis?
Eli Roth. I've rarely seen bad things about Bruce Willis, but
I hear he's terrible to work with. But you know, say that like I work with him.
Yeah. Well, so I've only looked at his things, right? Some of the things, Hostel, right? Hostel 2. He did Grindhouse,
right? He did,
and basically, he did the fake trailer. Yeah, he did the Thanksgiving trailer.
Yeah,
which honestly was actually one of the dumber parts of Grindhouse. He had a segment for Nation's Pride in Inglourious Basterds, right?
Mm-hmm.
Most notably, he did Green Inferno.
Never heard of it.
Which is supposed... The Green Inferno is supposed to be like a prequel to another movie. Because that... what was it? Cannibal something? Mm.
Okay.
Can't remember right now.
Anyway.
But then he also did Knock Knock. And that was the last one I saw of his name on it where I was like, this looks fucking stupid. Knock Knock was the Keanu Reeves movie where like those two girls invade his house.
Oh, yeah.
And then they like... They seduce him, and then they want to kill him for letting him, like, you know what I mean, like, for him getting himself get seduced. It made no sense.
Yeah, it's...
And I was just like, okay, so Eli Roth is either tries to be really offensive or really push the boundaries, or he just tries to be really fucking confusing with his movies.
Yeah, for sure. He is a fan of the old 70s exploitation film, which is why he's doing Death Wish. But at the same time, it's not like the fact that Eli Roth is doing Death Wish. It's just the wrong movie for the wrong fucking time. It's just, it doesn't work. I think this will be panned when it comes out in November. It's also going up against Thor. Thor will own November no matter when it comes out.
Yeah.
It's just, it's the wrong movie to make. You're going to make a movie about a guy who walks around with a gun and shoots black gang members? You're not going to win any prizes there.
Yeah, especially since vigilantism right now as a subject matter.
Yeah.
It's such a hair trigger topic.
Yeah, it's a hair trigger topic, but it's also like you have a guy walking around in a hoodie with a gun,
yeah,
shooting people, most of them black.
Yeah, it's just so messed. Like,
and this isn't to do with like a political thing or anything, like, or political correctness or whatever. It's just, it's like, do you know what's going on in the fucking world right now in America? Do you know what's going on? That's why I'm looking at. I was watching this whole trailer, and the other thing, the trailer is showing this fun, awesome movie, and it had, I think it was a Guns N' Roses song playing to it, and it's like,
yeah,
what the hell? This will not be the movie we get, for one. You're showing this fun action trailer, or this fun, like, you know, go get 'em kind of person, man, you know, movie, and it's just like, we're not going to... That's the movie we're not getting.
Well, so, ultimately, the reason why I'm kind of hiding hard words to say is because... I already said it. He picks topics that piss people off, or offend people, or are controversial, right?
I guess, yeah.
Yeah, like, that's a whole bunch of his movies. And he's just going to keep pushing it, like... And the thing that gets me, though, is it's like... The trailer builds it as an action movie.
Yeah.
This is not an action
movie. No, it's not.
This is... If anything, it's like... It's a romance letter to, like, street violence.
And guns, it seems.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's just, like, there's a big difference between watching something like Die Hard, right?
Right.
Which Bruce Willis has started, like, you know, forever, and he did this thing where, like, he's, oh, this gritty action hero. And, like, that's the thing I feel like he picked Bruce Willis, mm-hmm. is because people see Bruce Willis as a gritty action hero.
Right.
Right? But this isn't that. It's not going to be that if you look at anything. Like, for instance, Hostel was supposed to be a horror movie about, you know, kids in Europe escaping a serial killer or something. That's how it built in the trailers.
Right.
No, Hostel was a movie about watching a bunch of rich kids get tortured for, like, two
hours.
Yeah,
who were bought and sold and being, you know, to be killed.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, if you want to... I've always liked the Grindhouse movie, right? Like, the one that Eli has a credit in.
Right,
for, like, one of
the
dumb parts.
Quentin Tarantino and Robert Rodriguez made.
Yeah. When Quentin Tarantino and Robert Rodriguez make, like, homages to, like, 70s movies, they do it right because it's just overblown, it's dumb, it's just silly,
yeah.
Right?
Well, it's like you take Pulp Fiction and both Grindhouse films, I don't know what year those movies are in.
Yeah, you don't.
You kind of do with Death Proof, but not fully, because they're in their own world, you know? And yeah. That's the way you do it. With Death Wish, if you wanted to make a remake of it, one, I don't think you modernize it, and two, you don't make it an action film, and three, also, I don't know, you just don't make a goddamn Death Wish movie.
Yeah.
And Eli Roth, if you think he, like, how you're describing him, is, like, he just wants to push the boundaries and, like, poke the bear, as it were, to make people mad, well, then fuck him and everything he stands for. And I hope his career just gets trashed after this.
Yeah,
I don't like people who just decide to, like, poke and tease and test the limits of things, because that means that they just don't have any sensibility or class or etiquette on what they want to do. You know? And Death Wish, again, is the wrong fucking movie to make in this time. Especially when we have a gun nut a-hole as a president.
Yeah.
Not to get political, but, like, that's what we got.
To put a nail in the coffin, ultimately I think filmmakers have a responsibility, like most content creators.
Yes.
That when they make content for people to understand and view, they have to be aware of the world around
right,
them.
Exactly.
And what the impact they're going to draw. Now, granted, sometimes you just get weird things that happen, like when Catcher in the Rye, right? Some crazy person read the book and killed John Lennon over it. Not really connected, right? Like, you can't...
Well,
like, not a great book, but you can't really... Like,
well, who the...
But, like...
That fucking idiot shot...
Like,
tried to kill Reagan to impress Jodie Foster. I mean...
Right?
You know.
But, like, for instance, when Death Wish comes out and we see a spike in violence...
Yeah.
That's going to be core. That is connection, and you need to recognize it that way. You know, there's the way that you have to be. There are sometimes they're not connected. Sometimes they are. This is going to be one of those scenarios where I feel it's going to be heavily connected.
Yeah, it's like the Death Wish would not work today. Fucking God damn it! What's that movie with Michael Douglas? Oh, shit. You know what I'm talking about? You know what I'm talking about, where he basically just has a really bad day and starts going on this whole thing through L.A. and kills people?
Oh, my God. I know what you're talking about. I can see the scene in the McDonald's where he's pissed off.
Yeah. I have to look it up.
Yeah, so I would see which one of it gets there first. God, that was so long ago.
It was early 90s.
Yeah. But, like, it was just,
Ah, got it. Falling Down.
Yeah, I was just about to say. Yeah,
Falling Down is the... And that movie's as racist as shit, too.
Yeah.
But that movie also ends properly with him dying, so...
Yeah.
But... Yeah, it's just... And also, why remake? Why remake anything?
Well, I mean, in this case, Eli just wanted to remake something he enjoyed. And unfortunately, I think he enjoys shit.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, that's my opinion. I'm up there. Could be someone out there who's like, oh, but I liked Hostel, I like this. It's like, well, that's fine. You know, everyone's allowed to like what they like, but...
Yeah, yeah.
If this movie has the backlash that we think it does, that's kind of
it already does. GQ has a whole article about how this is the wrong time to have Death Wish.
Yeah, see? It's already started.
But it's also, Death Wish is just... In 1974, it wasn't a good film to begin with, at least in my opinion. I don't like how most movies were shot in the 70s. There's too many quiet moments and long shots. It's just, I don't like... Yeah, it... There's just, I have a problem with how some movies were made certain decades ago.
Alright.
But yeah, so Death Wish is coming out. We'll see what the fuck happens with that shit.
Alright.
Yeah.
If I can, then, can I just shift over to one of my other topics?
Yeah, go, it's like my last topic.
Alright, so I like MMOs. A lot of people have heard me talk about it. I am a big fan of Guild Wars 2, which I took a break from because the meta was driving me insane. On the first, there was a huge announcement for the next expansion, which is really cool, because the last expansion for Guild Wars 2 came out, Heart of Thorns, was about 2 years ago.
Okay.
So that's really cool. And this one's called Path of Flames. And so the reason I'm excited for it, and the reason I like ArenaNet so much, is that they've taken a lot of elements of MMOs, and I think they've done a lot of things right. And two of the big things that they're doing right now is they... The first thing is, you know, Guild Wars is a story-driven game.
Right.
And it's really... And a lot of MMOs say they're story-driven, but, like, Guild Wars has these instance story episodes that you can replay and stuff that are all about your character that make you the hero, and that's really cool.
Right.
And the main story of Guild Wars up until now was, well, the dragons are awakening, and they're going to destroy... Tyria and all of the magic, and we can't stop them. But the bad guy in Path of Fire isn't a dragon, it's one of the gods of Tyria. It's the god of war, Balthazar.
Okay.
And apparently he's awakened because he originally had a plan to destroy the dragons, but it would have basically sacrificed a lot of mortal life to do it. And so now he's come back to try and stop and to redo that. And that's interesting because up until now, everyone's like, oh shit, it's going to be another dragon. Which dragon's going to be? Because there's a few elder dragons in the books and everyone wants to fight them as bosses. And we've already fought two of them. And so everyone's like, oh, I can't wait to see what happens next. But no, instead it's like, oh, no, it's one of supposedly the good guys. And that's going to really shape how the rest of the game plays out, how they do patches and stuff and all the story elements. I'm like, that's cool. That I didn't see that. That was a curveball,
right?
Yeah,
that is interesting.
And the other thing they're introducing, and I think this is interesting, is that they're bringing in mounts.
They didn't have mounts before?
Nope. They had quick points, which cost you like a copper to use, and you could teleport around the world. And everyone generally moved about the same speed, and some people had speed boosts, but like, the world was so cool and interesting that you never felt like you needed to get through it quickly. But what I like about the developer diary about mounts was, mounts aren't just a speed boost. They're not about getting places quickly. Mounts are about exploration. And so what they did with mounts is that, to keep them in mind, it's all about forward, backwards, and vertical.
Okay.
And I like that. Like, they have, and they only have four mount types, and they're very interesting. They have a raptor, a giant hare, which is called a springer. The jackal, which is like made of sand, and then basically a flying sky manatee called the skimmer.
Interesting.
And I like that because these things are designed not to just help you move fast, but they're designed specifically to help you solve puzzles and traverse this huge desert area that's opening up. And that's cool because it makes them feel like they have a point. Like, I played World of Warcraft for a long time. I got mounts, and I hated having to work so hard to get mounts because it was like, well, they just make me move faster.
Right.
And, like, it sucks that the game... It sucks that I need to move so fast through these really cool areas that Blizzard designed because, like, that's how you have to treat it, right? Like, you just have to go from point to point to point.
Right.
Versus what Guild Wars does is, like, well, the world's super cool. You know, take your time. Enjoy it. And what I like about these things is, like, these four mounts, I guess you can have access to all of them because you'll need them to discover different areas. Like, the Raptor's really good at going straight long-distance leaps. Mm-hmm. The Rabbit's really good at vertical leaps. The Jackal has some sort of cool tunneling ability. And then the Skimmer is more for, like, a gliding thing. And, granted, you know, it's mostly for, like, I guess, quick leaps in certain areas that, like, require fast reactions. And those are four different types of movements you need. That's super fucking cool.
Yeah.
Especially since in Heart of Thorns, they were like, well, we want to challenge you vertically, so we added gliders. So now when you're at a top area, you can just glide down and stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And of course, I'm hoping that these mounts are accessible in Heart of Thorns. They might not be. They might be map-specific, which is fine. But it's like, at least they were like, hey, we don't have this in our game. Let's put it in there, and let's make it fun and worthwhile. Because I was like, oh, why would I buy a mount when I could use quick points?
Right.
And I literally click a point on the map, and I'm
and
there.
And it's the other thing with, like, MMOs. It is about the world. So it's like, you make an interesting world, and you have these secret areas and things like that. You want people to explore it and not just burn through it.
Yeah.
It also depends on the kind of player they are. You know, whether they're an explorer player or an achievement accomplished player, or that they want to, you know, just do PvE or PvP all the time. But, you know, it'd be also neat if the mounts added something to fighting as well. But
one other thing that I also forgot to mention, which is I like how they do classes in this game, because there's different specializations, and with Heart of Thorns, they introduced a new class. And then elite specializations, which basically changed your class into another version of your class.
Mm-hmm.
Like, basically, rangers became druids where they could, like, summon all sorts of animals, and instead of just being ranged, they could use a crazy animal magic, right?
Right.
But now, with this next expansion, they're added, each class gets another specialization, and this time they chose not to add another class, which I think is good because when you add too many classes, it kind of waters down, like, the character selection.
Mm-hmm.
And also, sometimes you run into the era of, well, you created warriors, but you also created berserkers. It's like, well, if berserker's fundamentally better than warrior, why would anyone build a warrior, right? In this one, it's like, nope, you can build whatever class you want because we don't make cost you money to reroll. If, like, we have these specializations not to make they have, like, seven classes. Or eight classes. Sorry, they have, like, eight classes. And they basically are constantly keeping them relevant. And I like that. I like that they're trying to address gameplay and how they can change the roles and the meta without trying to just be like, oh, we'll just add a new class to shake up the meta. It's like, no, we're going to take your old class and we're going to show you that there's more options.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's fresh. It's definitely better than, like, when they, like, WoW introduced that you could be a demon hunter, and I was like, why? Like, I was like, Illidan was cool because he was the only one. Why the fuck does all the Night Elves and Blood Elves get to be demon
hunters?
Yeah,
like, I mean, that's basically putting too much salt in the stew.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, I've never gotten into an MMO because I've never had the rig for it or the time. I would get into Guild Wars, but I don't know. You have to sink a lot of time into Guild Wars. And you know me, I already have a backlog of games.
True. I mean, that's my thing with it. Is like, I like Guild Wars and I'm willing to go back to it. But actually, before Guild Wars came out, I just joined a vanilla WoW Legacy server. It's free,
right?
Because it's not really funded by Blizzard, and Blizzard's not really happy to exist. But my buddy was like, hey, you want to play vanilla WoW? I was like, sure.
I thought they shut that down.
They did, but another one opened up, and it's in another country where Blizzard has no holding.
I see.
And I was like, you know, it's fun.
Mm-hmm.
But MMOs do take a lot of time.
Well, yeah, I think Blizzard robbed. Our friend Rob Chayton, he said, okay, this is when he, like, said, fuck WoW, I'm no longer playing it. I don't know if he, you know, went back at that. But he said to get an actual, like, feeling like you actually accomplished something in the game, you need to play for at least 2 hours or more.
Yep.
Comparing that to, say, like an FPS, say like Overwatch, or say COD, you need a couple of matches and you feel satisfied and you can do something else. You know, that's the difference. So
it's really funny.
It's the difference between eating some crackers and having like a really thick cake.
I remember talking to Rob about World of Warcraft because I had stopped playing and he was still playing it. And it was about the time he quit and he was pissed because he was like, it sucks that when they make changes to fundamentally try to like make the game accessible to all players, mm-hmm. right? But then most of the time you usually cut the hardcore players out at the feet. And what Rob got pissed off about was some of the server first achievements for doing epic level raids. Right. They took that away, and basically if you did a base level raid, like not epic tier, which is really hard, right? You could still get the server first achievement for it.
Oh, that's a rip.
And that sucked for so many guilds who were super competitive and people who had been playing forever because they were getting gypped out by people who weren't as dedicated to their server first achievements. And that's so shitty.
Yeah, I think he was also speaking of achievements on that. I think he said he spent like a couple, they have their Halloween event. And I think he said he did it. He's been doing it for a couple times every time they have their Halloween event to try and get this achievement about asking people for trick or treat, doing trick or treats, and you wear a mask. He finally got the achievement. I forget when, but then they had an update. This is after he stopped playing. I heard this from another friend, and it was so easy to get that achievement. Like, you could do it within an hour or less.
Wow.
Yeah, it's like, man, that really sucks. Like, you spent all this time to try and do this thing that, you know, you spent time on. And that's what some gamers like. They like the grind of it and the adventure and trying to figure out the puzzle. And then all of a sudden you find out later that this thing that you worked really, really hard for is just suddenly handed to them, to other people. And, I would definitely get pissed off, too.
That's actually why my friend Derek wants to play this vanilla WoW server. Because it's actually really tough. Uh-huh. I've only been playing it for about 3 days now. I'm only level 16. 17. And while that isn't necessarily bad, because I'm having a blast like with the nostalgia and all that, right? I also saw the Guild Wars announcement trailer, and I was like, Derek, I'm probably going to stop playing this in September when that expansion comes out.
Yeah, and then you'll probably stop playing Guild Wars when Monster Hunter comes out.
Yeah, that's true, too. Though, granted, I'm also at this point right now where I'm like, I'm not sure if I really want to get the expansion right now. I kind of want... Because after Heart of Thorns was fucking cool, but the meta changed so much, and it just, like, I don't know how I feel. Right. And then, of course, also, it's like, I want to play other games. Like, I want to play games with stories that end and other things. I also have this PS4 that I want to eventually get use out of when Monster Hunter comes out.
Right.
So, you know. Give and take, right?
Yeah, give and take. I mean... I'm just thinking, like, you know, there's Shadow of War coming out in October. That's, like, in 2 months. Plus, there's Wolfenstein, but you don't play that game. You watch Ashley play it.
The way I'm looking at it right now, to be honest...
There's a lot of shit coming.
So. Honestly, I'm actually thinking about taking all of my pre-orders, even my Destiny pre-order.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah,
and I'm
Destiny.
Thinking about taking those. The Destiny 2. By the way, the beta's cool, but I might not get it, because actually, it's kind of weird. Like, it's cool and fun to play.
Right.
But at the same time, it's like, wow, I realize I am playing an MMO on my console, and I'd rather just play Guild Wars if I'm going to play an MMO.
Enough.
So I'm thinking to myself, maybe I'll just wait till the holidays for all the games that I had pre-orders on. And just be like, hey, get me this for Christmas, right? And I'll play them then. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I'll just put all that money on a pre-order for Monster Hunter.
Yeah. Like, why not?
Yeah. Because that's the other thing, too, is like, now that I have all this time and accessible cash, like, I don't need to get everything at once.
Yeah, exactly. I think the only game I'm probably going to get right away is Shadow of War.
Also, I realized something. I haven't beaten Prey yet.
Oh,
And I really like that game, and I really want to beat it.
Yeah, you probably should beat it. Yeah, I know I need to beat Shadow of Mordor so I can play Shadow of War. Doom is kind of just pissing me off. I still need to beat it. But I've been playing a lot of Titanfall, so.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, one last thing. Just because it's just you and me, and I know that. So, I heard about something really cool happening to For Honor.
Oh, yeah?
They're going to get dedicated
service. Yeah, I think you mentioned that last podcast.
Okay.
They are getting dedicated servers, but they're changing up a lot of shit with the new season coming out, and they have two new champions coming. The Highlander for the Vikings, and the Gladiator for the Knights.
Well, so I was thinking. So the only reason that came back up is because I was talking to Ashley about it because I told her the news, and she's like, "You're not going to go back to that game, are you?" And I'm like, "No," because I think I can safely say the nerve scalp pain I was having is gone, and I don't want it back.
Yeah. I'm probably going to go back to it, but it just depends. Like, there's certain games I need to finish and beat. I should probably beat Shadow of Mordor, and I probably, because like right now my goal with Titanfall 2 is to beat to get to at least the regeneration 1 on my class, which is basically their prestige.
Yeah.
So the funny thing about that game, because you remember when I said that there's too much leveling up. So yeah. I already prestige because you can choose factions in the multiplayer, and I've been playing the Marauders, which are the militia. Okay. I've apparently, unbeknownst to me, I'm on prestige level 3 with them. Just them. I haven't prestiged my class. But they have a level system, and it's already been prestiged twice.
That's cool.
Yeah, but what's the point of that, in my opinion?
I guess you gotta figure it out.
There's no benefit. There really is no benefit. Like, I get a couple neat little banners I can put up. You know, whatever.
Oh, that's lame.
It's very lame. And then I prestige the gun I've been using since. And, the thing you get when you prestige a gun is you get this extra attachment that shows the amount of XP that gun is getting. Huh. It's like, I would love to sit down with EA or Respawn and like, hey, what do you want in a Titanfall 2 or Titanfall 3 game? And I have a laundry list of shit I would love to see, and an even bigger list of shit I don't want to see. And there's just too much leveling up in this game. Like, it bugs me. I'm still playing it. It's a fun game. I'm actually better than I would be at COD. But there's just too much leveling up. Stupid.
Fair enough. Well, it's pretty late for here.
Yeah,
for me.
I was gonna say we should want to wrap. We should end on that note. So
yeah. All right. Thank you for listening. Please like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, subscribe on iTunes. If you're on YouTube, like, comment, subscribe. If you're on Facebook, maybe give us a share. Yeah. Give us a
give
comment.
Us share. Send us and whatever, you know, news. Be cool. Music. That'd be also cool if you guys think you can make music for us. I don't know why I said that, but why not?
I don't know. Maybe someone out there listening. So, have a good night.
Yeah, have a good night, and we'll see you when we see you next week, and we will have Will. So, yeah. All right.
Later days.
Later.